Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is AC2GS with the Limar Technical Net. Limar Technical Net has been going strong for 40-plus years. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m. here on W2VL, and it's a linked repeater, you all join together to have another session of the Limar Technical Net, started by Dick K2RIW, who unfortunately became a silent P, but in his memory we continue it, where we come together and discuss new topics and old topics and teach each other and learn from each other and hopefully have an entertaining and informative time. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual link. Okay? If you need to reach me and can't do it through the radio, then email is as good as anything. That would be either for mailbag questions. Those usually were questions for people who couldn't reach us on the radio, so they would ask questions in email form and Dick would answer them. We don't get that many these days. But if you have any mailbag questions, certainly. If you have any topics for discussion, sometimes people volunteer to do little talks on topics that they find interesting, and sometimes they want to be part of a conversation about a topic, and sometimes they just want to hear other people discuss the topic. So that's another reason. And if you have a puzzle, if you found some kind of technology puzzle, amateur radio or physics or chemistry or what have you, and you think it might be interesting to the rest of us, and we do that every so often. They're like valuable pearls. They're not that easy to find, unfortunately. I've sought for good sources, and they just scatter all about the place. You just have to go searching like a guy with one of those iron metal detectors on a beach. So if you have that, or if you would like to ask Paul to comment on a space or NASA-related story. So my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Of course, if you want to directly ask Paul a question, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. I have a link page. When I find interesting articles, I cut and paste the links. If I see interesting YouTube videos and such, I cut and paste it. It's available on my website, on my link page. In order to get there, you type in roy.ac2gs.com, and we keep that up for years. So you don't have to go today to look at it. You can go tomorrow or the next week. We have a chat room. If you want to be in the chat room, sometimes it's very, very active, sometimes it's very, very quiet. And the easiest way to get there is typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. We audio stream the technical net. I audio stream the Limar repeater 24/7. So if you type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, that will give you an audio stream of the Glen Oaks repeater. And, of course, I always like to remind people, my KC2NJI has a great archive site called amateurradio.tv. It has archives of the technical net going as far back as September 2006. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, tonight, nothing particularly special planned. Unfortunately, I do not have a puzzle up my sleeve. But, you know, maybe we'll find something interesting along the way. So we're going to ask people if they have any technical questions or comments to check in and give me their first name and their call sign. Hopefully the first few people will have amateur radio-related subjects. But as time goes on, we'll open it to anything else, any science, technology, and even medicine. As always, we do not treat nor diagnose over the radio. But if you want to have general conversations about the different topics, it's all up for discussion. That should take us to about 10:50. Thankfully, Paul is once again in fine fetter. He was coughing last week, but that's gone, I'm told. And so he will be back to join us at around 10:15 to give us the SpaceNet report. I'm looking forward to it. That should take us to 11 p.m., and I will return and put a bow on it and wish you well for the following week. So that's my plan. If the laws of physics remain the same and nothing breaks down between me and the repeater. So, with that in mind, if there's anyone out there with any technical subjects or comments to be made, please hit that push-to-talk button, give me your first name and your call sign.
82OGB Mobile, I got a little update about my shack, and also a question, because I'm still stuck with something.
Bravo Zulu.
WB2KWC, two questions, one ham radio related.
Okay, Craig recognized, Rich recognized, and Ken recognized. Anyone else who want to put their name on the list for tonight?
Alpha Bravo 6, Mike Bravo.
Okay, Jeff, you want to be on the list tonight?
I thought I'd drop by and just say hi to everybody. It's good to listen to you. I might have a question about antennas. So, yes, put me on the list, AB6MB.
Okay, very good. That's AB2MB, Jeff. He's on the West Coast. He's the network control operator for the Papa Systems antenna technology net every Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Time on the Papa Network. So glad to have you aboard, Jeff. Anyone else want to check in and put their name on the list? Please hit that push the talk button. Okay, we have a good list as it is, and who knows, we might have more people as time progresses. Craig, KD2OGB, what's your follow-up and your question?
KD2OGB Mobile, just getting on to Sunrise Highway here. So, I'm almost done with my shack. I actually won myself on an auction on eBay, an ICOM 718. Maximum bid I put down was $480. Wanted for the minimum $380 because nobody outbid me at the last second. So about $400 and change. And I also just ordered my power supply. And so the last thing are the antennas. And unfortunately, the thing that's getting in the way is even if the antenna is 4 feet up, I looked up Town of Islip and I have a feeling that it's going to require a permit just to put up a 4-foot antenna, when I thought it would have been only if you had to put an antenna tower 35 feet or more. Is that true, Roy?
I don't know the zoning rule for every area, but you're the first person to mention that they had to get approval. Unless it's close to a airport, you know, I don't think anyone does that. I would be interested, because there's other people out there, if anyone is familiar with ICLIP's zoning rules. You know, there is vague rules for CBers that usually do not apply to anyone but CBers. So I'm a little confused by what you're saying. Again, if anyone out there knows anything about ICLIP zoning rules and any limitations to antenna height, please hit that push to talk and say your piece.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I've been in ICLIP many, many decades now. Got my ham license, 1986, and never even thought about it. There might be something, you know, in a paper somewhere that might say something. If there is, I've never seen it, never read about it, never heard anybody complain about it. I know people put up towers. I had a 35-foot pipe tower. I've shortened that, and I used to have a beam on top of that. And of course, I have dipole now. So no, there's never been a problem with that. You know, think about it. In the old days with the antennas, people used to actually have towers out here with antennas if they wanted to pick up New York. And they wouldn't have been able to do that if there was any kind of restriction. Back to you, Roy.
I would agree with you, Paul. I mean, I think I would have heard about it in the last, you know, 11 years that I've had my license. because, you know, people complain about such things. So, Craig, I think someone fed you bad advice. Like I said, when I first was going to set up my antennas, there was some guy that vaguely remembered a rule that turned out to be some kind of CB rule, but like most CB rules, tend not to be followed. But as far as an amateur radio operator, again, unless you're in a weird place where height is incredibly important, like right next to an airport, you shouldn't have any problem. I'm here in Brooklyn. I put up something that was about 30, let's see, it was 30 feet above ground level, and it was elevated an additional 20 feet, so 50 feet off ground level. And, I didn't need any kind of waiver or anything. So I don't know if you should ask around, but, it's probably better not to ask because someone might tell you something either wrong or that kind of limits your ability. So I don't think that's your problem. I think whoever told you that is kind of a distorted transmission where maybe he was alluding to a different location and different circumstances.
Question: is asking equal to raising red flag? Interjection.
In my opinion, yes, it is. There's an old saying that it's easier to apologize than ask permission. So I would not call up a zoning board and ask them specifically how high my antenna could be. But again, I would assume from the fact that amateur radio operators tend to be communicators, and they complain if something is worth complaining. And the fact that no one anywhere has complained about this would indicate that if there is a rule on the book, no one's read it in the last 50 years. So it's probably not a good idea to ask someone to go down to the sub-basement to read the rules.
So, think about this straight. You're saying that I should just do it anyway and basically take the bullet if something were to happen later? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
There was another station trying to say something.
Yes, whoever you are out there, you're very noisy. You're about 99% noise. So if you can rearrange your antenna or increase the output, give another try.
K2, CGW.
Yes, CGW.
As a member of a board of zoning fields years ago, if you don't have an antenna that's higher than the roof, you should be safe. Most municipalities, the height of a building is no more than 35 feet higher than the mean height of a road. So again, if you have a chimney, it doesn't go too much above the chimney, nobody's even going to notice it. Why even ask?
Okay, well, let me ask Craig, are you planning to mount your antenna on the ground or on the roof?
I would like it to be on the roof, and as a matter of fact, I did a little bit of research, and one of my guys in Riverhead said this would be a perfect idea. There are these two metal things, and I think you brought this up to me once. There are these two metal plates that you could put together with screws, shape it into a triangle, put it at the very top of the roof, and then using two very thin cinder blocks to hold it down, and guess what? You just made yourself a knot. And all you have to do is just run the wire through a window or something, and that's your antenna. But yet, parents and friends of parents are still worried, well, what if neighbors do this or that? And they just don't seem to want to work with me for some reason. I've tried to sit down with them, go over everything, go over the properties, as per what my friends tell me, and they just want nothing.
Okay, that unfortunately is not an uncommon problem when you're living with other people who... I did mention where there's a lot of different type of gravity mounts for antennas that rather than screwing a tripod into the roof or into the plywood underneath the roof, you can build a sort of a frame. Just make sure it's really strong, durable, and not going to rot away. And then place cinder blocks around the base to reinforce that position. So that certainly is a option. You can build them yourself, or you can buy them pre-designed, where you know they're made out of galvanized steel. They're very tough, and you can go either route. And the problem with people, and a lot of people have this problem when they live in co-ops and they have to deal with supers, or they live in a house where other people have the say of what's going on, it can be very difficult to convince people. You know, you can tell them the facts that there's no real danger, you don't run a lot of power, you're not going to do something silly and ridiculous. The worst that's going to ever happen is the wind might blow the antenna over, so you have a broken antenna. But, you know, since they didn't buy the antenna, you know, the antenna being ruined isn't going to impact. Unfortunately, you know, I mean, I find that when I first, I've said this story a few times, I prepped my first antennas in my backyard because I had a roofer planning to do my roof. And part of the contract was he was going to lift the assembly from the backyard and plop it onto the roof and screw it down. When I had the antenna in the backyard, I had people kind of staring at it and saying, what the heck is this? But as soon as I elevated above eye level onto the roof, I haven't heard anyone say anything about it. I don't even think they know it exists there. So I can't tell you exactly the best way to convince your parents. You know them better than I. You know, it's something, unfortunately, you have to find a way of explaining to them that this hobby is important to you and it's not going to destroy the property values and you'll do the right thing with it, and hopefully it'll convince them.
QOGB, I'm going to try one more time, and if not, then I'm just going to go with my backup approach, but it's going to require more planning, and I'm going to have to pay a professional to do it, is to get them in the attic. And my friend showed me his setup in his attic, and you actually would get very good reception. It's hidden from everybody, and the best part is you don't have to ground it either. And you basically can be fully covered as if you had radio equipment in your house, when really it looks like you don't, except maybe your car. Now, you were saying to me I really should attempt to put something on the roof that's not even that tall anyway and just take the bullet later, apologize, and ask, what do I do to get this approved or whatever? Is that what you're telling me, is to throw stuff on the roof now and take the bullet later rather than asking ahead of time and taking the bullet, saying, no, you cannot do that?
Based on my understanding of this area, that pretty much no one, and I'll give you the one exception, has ever been hassled as far as I'm aware. The chances of, you know, unless the entire neighborhood, you sacrifice children in some kind of altar, no one's going to know, no one's going to care, very few people even look up and they just scratch their head. No one's going to contact the authorities, and I've never heard of anyone getting into trouble, except the only two cases in the entire metropolitan area was a guy who actually decided he was going to build a tower in Manhattan. Now, you know, Manhattan is a special case. Usually you don't get away with building towers in Manhattan, and unfortunately he had to go to court for a while to get the approval. But again, you don't live in Manhattan, so that's not a worry. The other was a guy who was a regular of this repeater, who will remain unnamed, but everyone will know who he is, who upset his neighbors so terribly with so many different things in his house that among all the things, they reported him for everything and included his vertical antenna that was mounted on the ground that I think somehow he had to remove. But again, these are the These are the two very special cases of all the hams that I have heard about in 11 years. So what do I think of the odds of some organization contacting you and telling you that you're in violation? I would say it's significantly less than 1%.
One more time with my parents and try to talk it over, and there's probably a 99% chance that it will fail. But I'll see what I can accomplish here, and if not, then I guess I'll see you guys later then. Because I don't really have any other options left other than the attic, and I don't really want to go that route. I really want to go the professional and the logical route. So I'm just going to have to try my best to make this work, and if not, then oh well. Thank you very much, Roy. AC2GS Net Control, KD2OGB Mobile. We'll be clear.
Comment.
Yes, Wesley, I recognize. I'll give it to you in a minute. I just wanted to leave you, Craig. When we were talking about the outside antenna, I was kind of focusing in on the UHF-VHF antenna, where as high as you make it, the better it is. So if you want to get the widest contact with UHF-VHF, higher is better. So the roof level is okay, but some extension above the roof level will be even better. As far as HF is concerned, there are people who might be listening tonight who have attic-based antennas. They're perfectly fine, as long as you don't have any kind of metallic shingling, conductive material that will act as a shield on your roof. You can install a dipole or something along those lines. Something that doesn't need to be counterpoised, preferably, that doesn't need to be grounded, preferably, and you can install it in the rafters and do very well. I mean, will it do as well as outside? There'll probably be a degree of attenuation, but not severely, not in a way that would kind of limit your enjoyment of the hobby. So if you're interested in the option of an attic-based HF antennas, there's many designs that are appropriate. Certainly, that's a viable option. It was just for the UHF and VHF that I would propose that you, and, those things are really small. I mean, again, it's not that easy to kind of see them in action. They're very thin, and they're basically just plexiglass PVC tubes or acrylic and all kinds of plastic that's covering them up. So, if you can get away with outside on your roof, great. If not, go for the attic. And basically, you have to address the concerns of your parents. They usually will give you a specific reason why they don't like it. It'll decrease the resale value. It will put risk to the insurance. There's usually a reason behind it. So it's best to learn their reasons and adjust your arguments accordingly. But Wesley wanted to make a comment. So Wesley?
And thanks, Ian. My antennas were always not very high over the roof. The roof is not metallic. But if you have metallic one, the screwdriver antenna, or the Scorpion screwdriver antenna, is a pretty good one for it. They even install those antennas on mobile homes, DRVs, isn't it? The sense is, if you don't have a metallic roof, you can always tune that antenna for UHF and VHF, or even screwdriver antenna. But screwdriver antenna requires some kind of should be need of that. And it works perfectly well. Why people want to sacrifice, say, hey, I talk to you later because I cannot put in my parents doesn't allow me to do that. You can do it even on the side of the roof, right next to the roof from your attic window. And this way, it doesn't interfere with anything. Get to a ship.
Well, Wesley, it sort of depends upon his parents' attitude. They might just not want antennas sticking out of any part of their house. You know, again, it sort of depends upon his parents' reason behind it. Hopefully, it's not a case of, I just don't want it and I don't want to talk about it. It's usually a list of problems that they might have with it. I don't want to get electrocuted. I don't want to have my insurance increased. I don't want to start a fire. You know, there must be some kind of set of problems that can be addressed. So it sort of depends upon the individual. You know, if you're talking to a person who basically doesn't want any radiating antenna outside their house anywhere, even just kind of sticking it off to the side isn't going to ameliorate those types of people. That they'll still have problems with that.
Yeah, you have a valid point. The only thing is that people have some kind of piping or ducting on the house. Nobody cares because it looks like usual. You can always hide it in some kind of PVC pipe. You want it? I mean, how big is a screwdriver antenna? What is it? 2 feet? It's like nothing. And you put it into the PVC. What's the problem with it? Do you attach PVC to the side of the roof of the attic window? I mean, there are plenty of ways of doing it. The antenna doesn't have to be high over the roof. It could, if you don't have a metallic roof, it could be 1 foot off the roof, and it's still going to work perfectly well. Enter again.
AD2VHD.
Yes, Jeff.
Evening, gentlemen. Sorry to join you late. I had a couple thoughts. I went through this many years ago with 11-meter antennas. I could not make it happen until I put a good engineering project on a table that I won the day with good design and clean lines. If I had proposed to my parents to bolt an antenna through the roof, through the shingles, or held up with cinder blocks, I never could have got on the air. Then there's the old school American approach to this whole thing. Buy your own house, because it's not your house. That being said, there's 1,000 ways to do this. You can stick a J-pole on a broomstick out the window and it'll work just fine. So this is not an all or nothing thing at all, as there's nothing in this whole hobby we play with. KD2VHD, Jim, up the thing.
WB2AHK.
Yes, AHK.
All right, well, I'm a fellow that actually put towers up, not only in Queens. I still have 4 towers up in Queens. One of them's 128 feet high, amateur radio. And then in Long Island, Nassau County, I moved into Nassau County 30 years ago, and I went on a computer and I looked up the bylaws of the village I lived in, and they had actual information about putting up antennas. And make a long story short, there are regulations where your antenna has to be attached to the roof of your house and cannot be higher than 10 feet. That was the regulation. But I wanted to put up a pole next to my garage, which is a separate structure. Make a long story short, I went to 2 public hearings, and I was successful in getting the okay from the village of Floral Park, Long Island, to allow me to put up a 38-foot pole and a 4-element beam with no problem, and I'm still here, and they never bothered me. So I have some skills and information that anybody who would like to me to help them, if they want to put up a tower or anything like that, that maybe I can help them with some of the things I did in the area of putting up towers for amateur radio.
Okay, thanks a lot, Chet. Yeah, we all appreciate your experience and your knowledge This is a sort of a slightly different problem. It's not exactly, the way that Wesley was describing it, it was kind of doing a stealth antenna, which is okay if you want to keep out of the eyes of the neighbors. If it's your parents, it's much more difficult to hide things from your parents. If you're doing something sneaky, the first person who's going to suss it out is going to be your parents that you're living with. And although you did, as Jim mentioned, you didn't throw up a simple UHF, VHF antenna or J-pole, or there's a whole bunch of different things, and you'll hook it up temporarily and then take it down, or you kind of do sneaky little things. It's more difficult to do sneaky things with HF, and Wesley was discussing screwdrivers. Screwdrivers are nice mobile antennas. They're compromised antennas. They're a big compromise for a house. If you're going to have a screwdriver that operates, say, on 40 meters or, let's get ridiculous, 80 meters, where the width is 2 feet long, you're going to get about an efficiency of 0.5% if you're lucky. So I don't know if you're just interested in 10 meters, maybe the efficiency would be about 8, 9, 10%, maybe. But, if you're really interested in HF, going below that, a screwdriver antenna is, again, a great compromise for a car. I wouldn't exactly recommend it as your primary base antenna, though. But ultimately, you got to find something that your parents will be accepting. You can't kind of sneak it through, because although you can sneak antennas through your city, again, because they're not looking for it, they don't care. If you sneak it through your parents, they'll notice and they'll care. Okay, well, I guess we talked this all out, and or Craig had to do something else. But Craig, if you're out there listening, we all wish you luck. And if you need any technical assistance, Chad mentioned he's available, and you can come back and certainly talk on the repeater and ask people. You have lots and lots of years of experience of a lot of different people who've tried a lot of different types of antennas and different installations, so we wish you luck. Okay, on to the next. Rich, W2BZ, what's your question, comment, topic, what have you tonight?
Here's a question that has to do with getting old. I have a hearing deficiency in one ear over the other ear, so when I put on headphones, the balance is off. And I was wondering if there could be a simple circuit that I could build that would allow me to adjust the balance in the headphones. Simple circuit, simple question.
Hey, can we leave a comment? Sure, if you Google it, you'll find some schematics. Unfortunately, we're not living in a time where everyone's kind of doing it themselves. And even though makers are very popular, I'm not sure if they're doing a heck of a lot with analog circuits. They seem, if you go to a maker site, they do a lot of digital and servos and other such things. So, you could do a simple Google search for a headphone amplifier, and usually well-designed ones will include a balance control. Otherwise, you can go to Amazon and Google a headphone amplifier, and you just kind of put it between the radio and your headphone, and you can, usually there's a little pot that you twirl it, and it favors the right side or it favors the left side. I mean, if you're fortunate, your radio has those things built in. Many radios do equalization, and they'll shift the amplitude towards the right or the left. But when in doubt, either Google or Google Amazon. See how inexpensive a Chinese headphone amplifier might be.
Hey, Dwayne, do you have a quick comment?
Certainly, Mike.
Well, good evening, everybody. There's a much simpler approach. Heil Pro 7 headphones have the balance control built into them, so you don't have to worry about nothing.
Okay, that's a good answer. It means spending $200 plus on a new headphone, but yeah, that's an option as well.
But you can't beat the quality of the Heil headset and microphone. Works extremely well. I use them all the time.
Have you ever used Radio Sport headphones? I tend to prefer them. I have both, and I like the... they have many different microphone options. They're interchangeable microphones. And the headphone itself, I feel, is a little bit better designed. The Heil tends to kind of squeeze my skull, even though I bend the metal back.
Intuition.
Now, I've used Heils. Again, I've never had my head squeezed. But I'm talking to Pro 7. Yeah, they're a little on the expensive side, but they work great. And actually, they feel great. I can wear them for hours and hours and hours, and not a problem. And they do have interchangeable microphones to suit your purposes.
Okay, your mileage might vary. I am a fan of Bob Heil. I've emailed him and exchanged emails with him in the past. Right now, I'm using a Heil hand trigger. I have a Heil microphone sitting to the side. Right now, I'm using a Japanese HiQ Lite headset for this transmission. I've tried them all. Again, kind of like Radio Sport more. It actually probably costs a couple of bucks more than the Heil. But again, your mileage might vary. I mean, you're certainly free to your opinion.
Okay, well, just my opinion. But anyway, they do have the balance control to solve your hearing imbalance issues.
Okay, very good. Did someone else want to make a comment?
Yeah, listen.
On amplifiers, I had not one on Amazon that I went through about 50 or 60. Came with a balance control. They just have inputs for one to, let's say, four headphones, but none with a balance control. And nothing else in my research than a mixer, you know, which would be overkill for what I need. That's why I would think, you know, like one pot maybe with a resistor or something like that. One variable resistor, you know, could do the trick. And I'm talking about with stereo inputs and outputs. So, nothing on Google and nothing on Amazon, believe it or not.
PhD.
Wes wanted to talk, and then after Wes, Jim.
Yeah, put on Google wireless headphones with independent volume control. And I have like seven hits on it, direct and plenty others. Definitely Bluetooth iPhone headphones with independent volume control is there. So it's Audio-Technica ATH-SR5BT and plenty of others. I don't believe it's a big problem.
Okay. Jim, you want to say something?
I have an idea that I would try, but I can't say that I know that it'll work. If I was in that situation, I would try a relatively inexpensive one-ear headphone, which some people prefer because they have one ear open to the ambient noise, or another radio, or the XYL, or whatever else you're listening to. And if you put the headphone on the bad ear, you can control the volume on that from the radio, maybe make it as loud as you want, and leave the other ear open for ambient. It's not a total solution, but it's definitely a workaround that doesn't cost much money and might be helpful. I hope that's useful.
Yeah. Okay, very good, Jim. That certainly is a good idea. Rich, any comments?
They're fabulous headphones, and Wes, I already have the headphones, and they're wired headphones. They're not wireless. it just seems like it would be such a simple circuit to put together with one pot and maybe a couple of other components, just to, you know, decrease the volume in one ear while keeping the other one the same, or vice versa. It just seems like it would probably be electronically a simple thing to wire together if I knew what the components would be. Back to you, Roy.
Yes, Wesley.
I think the cleverest idea was one had a earpiece, mono, and the other one of your ear is just exposed to the ambient noise. I have a problem because my wife cannot speak loud. So when I put my headset on me, I cannot hear that she's talking. So I always try to flip one of the headset ears the other way, so at least I have one ear exposed. So what's the difference to listen to mono? It's a lot of comfort and is extremely inexpensive. And to Adrian.
Well, thank you, Wes. I just want to suggest to Rich, you know, if you kind of narrow your Google search to schematic for balanced headphone circuit type of thing, you might come up with something. I just happened to pull something off of a page called Engineer's Garage. Also from the chat room, John KD2BD has an excellent quick and dirty solution. If you have a series of low-value resistors, or if you have one of those lovely little boxes where you can kind of push in and change the resistance, if you apply a increasing resistance to the part of the headphone circuit going to the good ear, you can attenuate the signal, and then you boost the total signal, and you'll get it louder on your bad ear than you will on your good. All that costs you is a low wattage resistor.
That's what I was looking for, something like that, maybe to put resistors in series until it balances out. Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, I mean, generally the suggestion is, you know, get something with the approximate, you know, get yourself, I would guess, I don't know, but, you know, like a variable resistor that's linear or, you know, logarithmic, who knows what would work better, and, you know, something like 500 ohms or something, and put it on the electrical circuit that's going to the good ear. And then you start it with a basic short circuit, and shut it and turn it down to a higher resistance. What you might have to do is up the power going to the headset, but you find a sweet spot where the attenuated signal to your good ear is approximately equal to the your bad ear.
So you think it could be just one component, a variable resistor?
Yeah, I mean, it's a quick and dirty solution. I mean, you know, electrical engineers probably would come up with much better sophisticated circuit design, but in a pinch, it probably will work, you know, just as long as, you know, you get the ohms right.
PhD.
Yes, Jim.
It's probably possible to attenuate the sound on a good ear mechanically rather than electrically also, and you can probably do that with something you have around the house. I'm sure Roy can elaborate on some ideas.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's also a possibility, that you don't necessarily have to have a clean output from your acoustic a generator to your ear. You could put something that's slightly sound absorbing. The only problem with that is you got to kind of know what you're doing sometimes, because you could end up muffling the sound. So it'll not only attenuate the amplitude, but it might kind of cause some distortion and you know, there'd be different frequencies that would be more attenuated than others. So all things being equal, probably I would go with the resistor if the choice was a resistor versus a couple of sheets of, say, tissue paper over the headphone output.
I think the resistor would also take away some of the frequency response, Roy?
It shouldn't really, unless the transducer is sensitive to the amount of power in a nonlinear way. You know, resistors shouldn't really introduce any kind of nonlinear distortion.
All right, well, a variable resistor seems like way to go. I wouldn't hazard a guess as to what value I should start at, but maybe I could pull something out of a dead piece of equipment around here and just experiment with that, you know, with just one component on one side of the stereo signal feeding into the variable resistor and then into the headphones. I'll give it a try.
Okay, and, you know, you could try it out, and if it's, you know, if it's somewhat ridiculous, like if the only thing that you find is a half a mega ohm variable resistor, and the distance from a short to the optimum signal is a hair's width, you know, you could try your best to approximate and then get your volt ohm meter to give you a proper resistance reading, and you know, get a shiny new potentiometer that's you know, I guess they cost a buck or two. You know, so that's an option. If you can find one that that works that you already own, then that's the bonus.
All right, I'll give it a shot and I'll report back. W2BC.
Okay, very good. Good luck with it, and thanks, KD2BD. He's always full of great advice, so I appreciate his presence in the chat room. Yes, you're about 50% noise, but I do hear you, Andy.
Yeah, I'm in the process of eating. MFJ makes a set of headphones with individual volume controls on each ear. The MFJ 392B, which is $50.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, I happen to own that pair. I have it right here.
Yeah, I mean, I have a Pro 7 myself, and I just took a second look at it. I haven't used it in years, but yeah, it does have a balance control on it. There are headsets that do have balance controls, those that don't. You know, probably what would be real nice is if someone somewhere took apart the balance control of these headphones and printed the schematic, and then Rich could just build a little copy of it, because it's probably just a pot.
This is not really a balance control with one pot. This is a slide adjustment on each individual ear on the headset itself. You can turn one off, turn one on. You can have more versatility. Two separate controls, one to each side.
Okay, but ultimately, I mean, you're our technical guru. Isn't your suspicion that it's just two sliding potentiometers in parallel?
Well, if you want to say that, yeah, one goes to one earpiece, and the other its control goes to the other earpiece, and they come together.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is there's probably no active circuits going on. It's just It's just two variable resistors that are independently adjustable.
That's right. There's no electronic control of the stuff.
Yeah. So it's a shame you can't kind of Google what the value for the variable resistor would be. That would give you a good idea of what kind of variable resistor Rich could kind of use the best. Again, I know you don't want something like a half a mega ohm variable resistor, because that's way too much of a good thing. So, you'd have to kind of adjust this to close to being shorted with a set of tweezers or veneer calibration knobs and such. So, I don't know how many, my guesstimate would be probably, 500, 1,000 ohms should be more than enough range on a variable resistor to kind of reach an attenuation, a decent attenuation for the purposes that Rich has.
Yeah.
AB6MB.
Yes, Jeff.
Yeah, I posted this in the chat, but most headphones are 8 ohms or a multiple thereof. 4, I've heard of them being at 4, I heard 8. So you wouldn't need a very big variable pod to, cut the, the volume down. 100 ohms maybe. I'm just guessing. It seems like it'd be pretty easy to get a couple of them fairly cheap. And, maybe 1K ohm just for a lot more padding. Maybe 6MB.
Okay, very good. Unfortunately, the EchoLink text is the smallest text on my multiple screens, so it's the last one that I read. So I'm sorry, Jeff. We had another entry from John KD2BD. He says headphones tend to be about 60 ohms, he suggests. 8 ohms is the usual impedance for a cone loudspeaker transducer, but apparently for headphones, John believes 60 ohms is the usual thing. So he says maybe start with a 500 ohm or a 1,000 ohm pot, which is kind of what I suggested as well. So, if you have one, that's great. If you don't have one, try whatever you have. See if you can get it to work. Measure the resistance and maybe purchase a nice new shiny one, since they don't cost that much. Although I remember when I was a little kid, I was building something that required a variable resistor, and I went to, wasn't Radio Shack, it was Lafayette, and the guy wanted to sell me a something like a 50-watt audio potentiometer for only $25, so let the buyer beware.
Hi.
So, Rich, we seem to have people doing strange things out there, so it would be nice if they did strange things somewhere else. Rich, you want to try one more time?
That time I heard you. I got it, Roy. I looked for a variable resistor around 1K. And take it from there. I'm sure they're very cheap, and I could find them in a multitude of places, especially on eBay. So I got enough to experiment with. That's what I thought a variable resistor would might be the answer. So, and like Andy was saying, I don't know if I need one on both sides or just one side. The big question is whether they'll, deteriorate the frequency response of the headphones the way they are. But probably not. The only way to tell is experiment, which I will do this week. So back to you, Roy, W2BZ.
Okay. Yeah, I wish you luck. I can't see where it would add distortion, because you know, I mean, that's what you're doing when you're adjusting the volume control on your radio. It's decreasing the amount of volts being supplied to the transducers. So it would be a sorry state if sound transducers were nonlinear and added distortion if you just lowered the signal. Let's see. Another comment by John, only in series with the good ear. He suggests the damping might be affected, but that really only affects the bass response, not a big deal for radio work. I don't really see, you know, I mean, John knows far better than me, but I don't really see why a simple resistor would significantly affect the equalization of the output circuit. But, you know, it depends, I guess, on the output circuit. But I, again, wouldn't worry about it, but try it experimentally, and my guess will be that you really don't see any difference.
82 AMZ?
Yes, Mike.
Okay. I was listening to the conversation, except everybody forgot the same thing. When you set up your pot, set it up as a voltage divider, not as a variable resistor, because it's going to be a nonlinear response. You're going to remember, a headphone is around 50 to 100 ohms, and if you remember back to your high school physics, well, maybe not physics, but engineering, when you set up a pot as a voltage divider, you take the impedance across two when you take it off the tap, so if you get about 100 ohms, that'll be just fine. And remember, voltage divider becomes a linear response, otherwise you're going to get be nonlinear. Okay, I don't know if I'm making sense or not, but the engineers out there will understand.
WB2KWC.
Yes, Cass.
Okay, I'm wondering if Rich already has some form of hearing compensation. Are you wearing hearing aids? I know my wife has a set of hearing aids where there's an app on her phone which can adjust the volume of each ear separately. And then she can actually save that as a profile. So if you've got hearing aids, you already may have your solution.
No hearing aids yet, Ken, but coming soon. With all sorts. There was another station in there, Roy, a KD2, who was trying to get through.
Are you referring to me, KD2 AMZ?
Yes, I was.
Ah, okay. Are you familiar with the how a voltage divider is made up of two resistors?
I should be, but no.
Okay, it's very simple. Let's say you take two resistors and you stick them in series. And if you make them both the same value, let's say 100 ohms and 100 ohms, and you apply your voltage to the two end resistors, and that is a common point is your voltage divider, then you're going to get half the voltage. So it's a ratio of voltages. Look up on Google, voltage divider. You're going to get a linear response versus a non-linear response if you're just using it as a variable resistor. Am I making any sense at all?
Yes, I will look up voltage divider. This makes sense. B2BC.
And the way a voltage divider will work with a pot, you apply your input signal to the two end terminals, and then you pick up your other, your output from your negative or ground terminal and the common terminal, the potentiometer wipe. Then you're going to get a linear response and a linear voltage. So halfway across is half the voltage, three quarters is three quarters. Look up voltage divider with resistors. And I keep it to around, I don't know, 50 to 100 ohm pot. Otherwise, it's just going to be such a, you're going to touch it a little bit, it's going to go bonkers.
Okay, thank you, Mike. I just want to add John's opinion, KD2BD. because I asked him, and he thought that the voltage divider was unnecessarily complicated. He said, just stick a series resistance and be done with it. Also, for Rich's purposes, you have to understand that there are two different, they call them tapers with variable resistors. There are linear tapers, and there are logarithmic tapers, or otherwise known as audio tapers. Human hearing doesn't work linearly. It works logarithmically. So if you apply a linear curve,